Hello and welcome to the podcast. I am your host, Meg Getzinger, and today I will be talking to you about killer whales, the wolves of the ocean. And what you are listening to is orca whale whistle sounds, which is one of the sounds that orcas will make to talk to other members of their pod. Today in this podcast, I'm going to talk about the fascinating ways that orcas interact with each other, the feminist way that their social system is set up, and some of their conservation challenges and what is being done to help. Orcas around the world communicate in different ways, just like how humans all over the world have different languages and different dialects. Orcas have three different vocalizations. They use pulse calls, which are quick bursts of sound used to communicate over long distances, whistles that are used for short-range communication, and clicks that are used for echolocation. By using echolocation, orcas can actually tell what species of fish is in front of them by knowing the different sounds that bounce off of different species' swim bladders. Other than auditory communication, orcas are known to have very sensitive skin and will swim alongside members of their pod to show affection and grow connections. Orca calves will swim touching their mothers for much of the time after they are born. Sarah Guarino published a research article in the Zoo Biology Journal about the first 3 years of development in orcas. Her research showed that young orcas spend most of their time alongside their mother the first year after birth, but after this first year, they spend more time swimming and playing with other orcas in their pod, as well as swimming alone. One interesting find in the study is that orca young, when spending time with other pod members besides their mothers, prefer swimming with female orcas more over males. And I like to think that orcas are the feminists of the ocean. They live in these matriarchal pods, which means that the orcas stay with their mothers after being born. There is a single matriarch grandmother who is basically in charge of the pod and lends care as well as her wisdom to her children and grandchildren. Males will leave their mother's pod to mate with nearby pods and then return back to their mother and their grandmother. Fathers don't give care to their own offspring, but they do care for the young when they return to their mother's pod, so their nieces, nephews, relatives. Humans, pilot whales, and orcas all have one thing in common that is unique to all other mammals. They go through menopause. Female orca whales can live a third of their lives not reproducing, which for most mammals is something that is not really beneficial. The vast majority of mammals reproduce their whole life, and in most cases, the amount of offspring you are able to produce in your life correlates to how successful you are. So why would orcas spend a third of their life not reproducing? The likely reason is so that these grandmothers can share their experiences, such as where to hunt and how to hunt, as well as help raise their grandchildren. I have always been very fascinated and amazed by orca whales. I grew up in Washington near the Puget Sound, and I remember being very young seeing orcas in the Hood Canal from outside my window. I now know that the orcas I saw were likely members of the Southern Resident Community, which is a community of orca whales in the Pacific Northwest that has been listed as endangered under the Endangered Species Act since 2005. There are only 73 individuals left as of 2019, and the numbers have been decreasing since 2005. One of the main problems that these southern residents face is that they have limited access to food. Orcas are apex predators, and they're typically generalists, meaning that they will pretty much eat whatever is most abundant or whatever is available. Orcas are known to feed on all kinds of fish, aquatic mammals like seals, and an orca has even been recorded eating a moose. The southern residents do not have access to moose, unfortunately, and they are actually Chinook salmon specialists. They prefer to feed on the biggest, oldest, and most nutrient-rich salmon, because hunting a tiny salmon just isn't worth the energy expenditure to catch it. A large reason why the southern residents are listed as endangered is because the Chinook salmon is also a species of concern in the Pacific Northwest. An organization called Save Our Wild Salmon has started a project called Protecting Orca by Restoring Salmon. Their plan is to restore the native Chinook salmon population in the Snake and the Columbia River to in turn help provide orcas with a larger food base. These conservation efforts are very important, and if you look at any other predator-prey relationship, increasing the amount of prey will almost always increase the amount of predators. The only issue with this is that it will take time before the Chinook salmon population is able to get to the point where the average Chinook salmon is larger, older, and worth the orca's time and energy to hunt. Once the salmon population is restored to that point, it will be a lasting solution. But in the meantime, orcas are very vulnerable because they simply don't have enough food to continue to grow in population size. The southern resident community in the Pacific Northwest is also being challenged by noise interference by boat motors and water contamination. With noise in the water from motorized boats, orcas aren't able to properly echolocate to hunt and will avoid those areas. To help with this, over 2,500 square miles have been designated as critical habitat for orcas, and regulations against motors as well as point source pollution have been going into effect. I think that one of the most important things for people to do is just to educate themselves about orca whales and to learn to admire and respect them. It's about that time to sign off, but I want to thank you for listening, and I hope that you enjoyed today's podcast.